Hey everyone, welcome to the OJ Tucker podcast, the only comedy tennis podcast that talks about our political and societal culture as a whole. How have you guys been doing? My name is OJ Tucker, as the name would suggest. Hopefully you guys have had a good 48 hours. Last time I talked to you guys was last Tuesday, or this past Tuesday, I should say. And yeah, hopefully you guys are doing well, getting ready for the weekend, you know. Getting ready for those playoff games and playoff matches between the other NFL teams. I'm still rooting for the Buffalo Bills. I want them to win. I think what they represent for NFL and what they represent for just that team and that city in general is very important. And yeah, I mean, without no further ado, let's just get right into the topics, all right? So let's talk about some tennis topics. So obviously, we can talk about the Abu Dhabi Open and about Aryna Sabalenka facing off against Maria Sakkari for the Abu Dhabi final, and Sabalenka destroyed her. She annihilated Sakkari. I think she won in straight sets, and honestly, she's a great player. She's an aggressive baseliner for one, so it was very prevalent and very evident within that match that she relied heavily on her baseline play as well as her serves, and just that sheer power was just able to overmatch Sakkari whenever she needed that help the most. And I think she's a great tennis player. Now, do I think she's going to win the Australian Open? Hopefully soon. Hopefully she's able to win a major. I've seen sometimes during her performance and over the course of her career where she hasn't really been able to pull off a major win. But hopefully this changes. Hopefully this major changes. And I think she has the best odds in terms of winning the Australian Open, in terms of the WTA side. Obviously, there are great players on that circuit. You know, Simona Halep, I think she's also playing as well. Naomi Osaka as well. So you do have a few all-court aggressive baseliners in play for the WTA. But at the same time, I do think that she currently right now has the best chance to win. And hopefully she can pull it off. You know, I think, you know, what she's shown during that stretch is commendable. And hopefully we can see that consistency later in the tournament as well. Also, what also broke out was the Andy Murray news. So if you haven't noticed or if you haven't heard the news yet, Andy Murray has tested positive for the coronavirus. And this is not good news because currently Great Britain, England, has been shut down due to the COVID pandemic. And they have a new strain, so I'm pretty sure that must have been the strain that Andy Murray has caught. And this is not good news for tennis. This is not good news for ESPN, for Sinclair Media, because Andy Murray is, regardless of how you may feel about him because of his injuries, he is a draw for the sport of tennis. And if you really enjoy the sport of tennis, this is not good news whatsoever. Hopefully other tennis players within Great Britain, within England, can stay healthy for the Open. But yeah, this is not good news because for me, obviously, he's my favorite tennis player, as I've said before on this podcast. And I want him to do well. I think if Andy Murray succeeds, if these tennis players succeed, then I think tennis as a whole succeeds. So it is frustrating and disheartening when you see Andy Murray being tested positive for the coronavirus. At least it's better than him being tested positive for like a drug or something. That would have been far worse, not only for his career, but just for the sport of tennis in general. But again, I'm thankful that we can at least use these guidelines that are in place to make sure that these tennis players are healthy and can perform at a high level. And hopefully we don't see individuals getting caught with corona, especially with England due to the new strain. I mean, obviously, having the Open, having the Australian Open as scheduled, as planned, is not necessarily the best way forward, but unfortunately, you know, this is tennis and the people in charge aren't always the best when it comes to making decisions, but at the same time, you can't really blame them because they're already losing so much money as it is. So, yeah, hopefully Andy Murray can get that fixed. You know, I really want him to succeed, and I really want him to win the Australian Open because he's right now 0-5 against people in the finals. And the last thing I want to see Andy Murray do is not being able to play the Open and not being able to for him to win another major. Because I do think that it does diminish him with his contemporaries if he isn't able to win another major. Right now he's tied with Stan Wawrinka with the most amount of majors won at 3. I think he's won the Wimbledon twice and has won the US Open once. And I think he's won the Olympics twice as well. So he's won gold twice at the Olympics. But this is not good news if you're an Andy Murray fan like myself. It just isn't. But again, I would much rather have him be tested positive and not play the Open than have him go through the thick of it and then lose the final match against Joker or Nadal. I just get PTSD whenever I see Andy Murray at the finals because I can just tell that he's going to lose. And not in a way that makes me happy for him, but in a way that makes me realize, oh, why did he win all this just to lose the final match? But hopefully he can stay well, stay rested, and follow the guidelines to be in the Open. Again, once Andy Murray declines, or once any of the big three declines, I do think you're going to see a massive downslide in terms of the popularity of tennis. So now that Andy Murray has been tested positive, and now that I've talked about the WTA circuit, I think we can just go ahead and talk about who I think will win the Australian Open. For me, and this is entirely based off what I want to see, not what's going to happen, but what I want to see is Nick Kyrgios being able to perform at a level which can elicit people within his country, which is Australia, if I'm not mistaken, to support him, and maybe even to perform to the extent where he can win Opens and win majors and can compete with the best of the best and not necessarily rely on cheap ways to get that media attention. So I'm hoping that Nick Kyrgios can win the Australian Open. I think he is the future of bridging the gap between entertainment, our current contemporary culture, with tennis culture. He is the synthesis between those two, and I want Nick Kyrgios to win. I think he is a great tennis player. He brings the eyeballs to the product. And the more people that watch the product, whether or not they're casuals, whether or not they're diehard fans, I think that elevates tennis as a whole to be more profitable and to get more eyeballs on these other tennis players that have won majors, that have won these ATP tournaments such as Dominic Thiem, Zverev, Tsitsipas. I mean, obviously, the latter, the last two that I've named, have never really won a major, but at the same time, I do think that it benefits tennis as a whole when you do have those individuals. So I want to see Nick Kyrgios win. I think he brings a lot to the table. He is electric near the baseline. He can bring out the woos in the audience with his unorthodox style, and that benefits him as a whole. And I really want him to succeed, and hopefully he can be able to make a formidable round and a formidable challenge to these other tennis players that are also in the thick of it as well. So I think that's it for like the tennis news, which hopefully as it progresses, I can talk more about it with the Australian Open. But again, we have to talk about, you know, politics as well. It is a comedy tennis podcast that talks about our political and societal culture as a whole. And the House have just decided to impeach Donald Trump. Obviously, he's the main reason why the Capitol Hill protests occurred, the storming of the Bastille, if you will, even though it wasn't really a storming of the Bastille or basically a coup, it wasn't really any of that. But the Democrats and Republicans have decided to impeach Trump. Apparently 10 Republicans on the House floor decided to impeach him. One of them was Liz Cheney. And honestly, I think that they are impeaching Trump for the wrong reasons. Now, do I think it's an impeachable offense? Sure, 100%. But at the same time, the reasoning behind their impeachment is something that I don't necessarily agree with. And the people that are backing this impeachment also have questionable motivations behind it as well. For instance, I mentioned Liz Cheney. So Liz Cheney wants to impeach Trump, but not for the reasons that you may suggest she wants to impeach Trump. The main reason why I believe that she wants to impeach Trump is so that the GOP can abandon populism at the forefront and revert back to neoconservatism. If you guys don't know Liz Cheney, Liz Cheney's father basically lied us into the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I don't even want to say her father's name, because to me, her father's name is like the boogeyman, right? I mean, to me, I view his name no different than what Cuban Americans in Miami may view socialism. Like, that's a boogeyman word. You know, you'll see a lot of Republicans market and campaign based off accusing their Democratic challenger of socialism. And basically what you see is a bunch of Cuban Americans support Republicans because to them, socialism is the boogie word. It's the unforgivable word. And to me, her father is my boogie word. I can't bring up the man who has committed war crimes. You know, obviously, I think Donald Trump should be impeached as well, as I was saying earlier, mainly because of the killing of Soleimani and for basically drone striking Syria as well. And I think he should be impeached for war crimes. But again, the reason why Liz Cheney is supporting this impeachment is not for the reasons that you may think she is supporting his impeachment. I was seeing Dan Crenshaw, who, by the way, he's being exposed each and every day. Him being on SNL with Pete Davidson was probably the biggest thing he's ever done, because it sort of exposed him for the establishment conservative views that he has. But apparently he quote tweeted Liz Cheney saying, "Oh, even though I may disagree with Liz Cheney, I think that it's completely within her right to impeach Donald Trump, and I think this can bring unity within the party." And you saw Matt Gaetz quote tweet quote tweet Dan Crenshaw quote tweeting Liz Cheney saying, "I'm so happy that this is the minority view of the minority party." Now, I don't know if this is the minority view. I think a lot of Republicans are completely fine with him for the war crimes and for having that neoconservative view and perspective. Obviously, there are a few outliers to that. Matt Gaetz, one of them. Rand Paul, one of them. But it is true. I do think that there has to be some form of having a party, Republican Party, that is anti-war. Because they were once anti-war party. I mean, George Bush in 2000 campaigned on a non-interventionist foreign policy. Same with Dwight Eisenhower and even Teddy Roosevelt, to, you know, what these populists sort of hold up as, you know, the beacons of populism on the right. Even Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell is trying to impeach Trump. I don't think it's going to be successful either, because it's in the Senate and the Senate has yet to pass it, and there are a lot of Republicans that probably won't impeach Trump because of the fact that Trump has helped them with their campaigns. But even Mitch McConnell is trying to impeach Trump. And honestly, the reason why he is trying to impeach him is because of the fact that these corporations are abandoning the GOP. They're not trying to help out the GOP whatsoever, and he's trying to help out the special interest to maintain that relationship between those corporations and the GOP. So again, like, you have to realize that the reasons why they are in full-fledged support of impeaching Donald Trump is not for the reasons that they should be commended on or that they should be supported on. You know, there's this famous meme of Mitch McConnell where it's just his face with a bunch of products and corporations attached to it. And it's true. I mean, he is the corporation's mouthpiece, and it is kind of frustrating to see a person who's been reelected time and time again by a state that really counts on him to better the state, to better the healthcare, financial, and economic structure of the state, being passed down time and time again because of these decisions. Even AOC is trying to impeach Trump, and apparently somebody tweeted at her. Let me just pull up the tweet for a second. And she basically said this thing about, oh, this is about the soul of American democracy and how we need to hold these people accountable. Something of that nature, of like empty platitudes. But somebody sort of commented under her post saying, what is the purpose of the vote? Like the one tonight, where the answer is already known, regardless of the result of the vote, is it mainly just to get representation on the record? Which is a fully credible question to ask. But AOC basically responded saying a few reasons. Sometimes it's to get members on the record so people cannot make excuses later. Sometimes these votes create real political pressure that forces developments. And sometimes we vote for the historical record to let future generations know we did everything we could. And while I respect that answer, to me, it felt like she was walking backwards, or she was not really being 100% honest with what her previous positions were on forcing the vote for Medicare for All. Jimmy Dore and a bunch of these other, left-wing populist YouTubers that I highly suggest you check it out, Kyle Kalinske, the Justice Democrats, to name a few, were in support of forcing the vote for Medicare for All. Obviously, it's a pandemic. You should force a vote. Even if you know that you're not going to win the vote, you should at least force the vote to create real political pressure, as AOC says about impeachment. But the fact that she's walking back on her stance on Medicare for All for forcing the vote to now being in full force with impeachment, it just shows the hypocrisy on her level, especially when you realize that she time and time again votes for Nancy Pelosi to be Speaker of the House. And I think that is an interesting juxtaposition between her stance on Medicare for All versus her stance on impeachment. Obviously, it's not going to get passed in the House, but the fact that she's, again, saying that sometimes we vote for the historical record, what's more historical than giving people healthcare, a public option healthcare, during the middle of a pandemic and forcing a vote on it? What's more important than having that as your historical record? I don't know. AOC has been very... It's been very sad to see the constant demise of AOC. I'm not saying that she's not going to be president or be a senator. I think she's going to primary Schumer and she's going to run for president. She's going to fail, obviously. But it's sad to see how she is now the spokesperson for left-wing populism. Because in a lot of ways, she shouldn't be. I mean, she's in favor of blocking food and medical ports to Venezuela. She's not in favor of pardoning Julian Assange. She's basically had a foreign policy that has been essentially the lighter version of Nancy Pelosi and John Bolton. I mean, if this is left-wing populism, then sign me out. I mean, I would much rather be on the boat of, what's her name? Rashida Tlaib or something? Aqib Tlaib, something like that? I don't know. Again, it's just sad that this is like the face of left-wing populism, because I do think it's a radical departure from the Bernie Sanders type of left-wing populism that should be on the House and Senate floor. So yeah, Republicans, Democrats, in unison to destroy right-wing populism, in unison to impeach Trump, but not for the reasons that should be accounted for. So apparently I saw a day or so ago, let's get off of politics for a second. Let's talk about something a little bit more lighthearted, a little bit more relevant to just about societal and in particular movie culture. Wonder Woman has been, well, let me rephrase this. Warner Brothers has submitted Wonder Woman for the Oscars in 15 different categories. Now, as I've said in my previous episode, I hate Wonder Woman 1984. It is a convoluted piece of trash that deserves to get trashed by the critics, by people alike. Again, this is just my opinion, but I truly believe that we should just send superhero movies into the sun, because overall they've just become giant globs for Chinese cinema and just a complete dumbing down of what makes cinema good and competent. So again, Wonder Woman has been submitted for the Oscars for 15 times. Now, let me just give you why. Let me just tell you the reason why this is a great piece of marketing. Okay, right now, the movie industry is on its deathbed. I'm not saying it's dead, but it's lying on its deathbed right now. It's currently in critical condition. It's obviously going to get bailed out by government, because there's a lot of money to be made through movies. I still believe that. But currently it's on its deathbed. Apparently Wonder Woman only made $3 million at the box office. And right now it's currently streaming on HBO Max. This is a great way to market your product, because you realize that at the end of the day, what matters is attention. And as long as people are watching the product, however it may be, whether it's on HBO Max or actually going to the movie theater to watch the product, even if the product is horrible, at least it gets people to watch the product and really generate that attention for people to go see it. Right? There's a reason why, again, it's weird to talk about this because this happened like 8-9 months ago, but there's a reason why that Imagine video with Gal Gadot singing and with all these other actors singing was a great way to spark attention. And honestly, it really showcased how desperate these actors are to just get a camera in front of their face, regardless of whether or not it's artistic or experimental, or whether or not the directors are great, and whether or not the cast and crew can generate buzz and generate artistic merit behind the project. What these actors more often than not care about is generating attention. And to me, this piece on Wonder Woman being submitted for Oscars, it's just basically the Imagine video times 100 on a magnanimous scale. You know, when I saw the Imagine video, when I saw Gal Gadot and all these other actors doing whatever they could to get attention, it's like, oh, you don't really care about the art. You don't care about whether or not it's good or whether or not it's impactful, because clearly you're doing this for an Imagine video. You're doing this lip syncing to a song that you have no artistic stake in, no artistic input in, during a time where a lot of people were unemployed, where nearly 10 to 15 million people were unemployed, where people were scratching for a paycheck, for some form of stimulus relief. And you send this video where you're in your privileged homes. I mean, how elitist is that? And again, it just shows and it highlights to a bigger extent how Gal Gadot is just not that interesting as an actor or as a human being. Like, I understand why people like her. I just don't get the purpose of her. I'm sorry, I just don't. I mean, to me, she's up there with Priyanka Chopra as to how non-essential they are. And that was the Imagine video. It was a lot of celebrities coming together and saying, wow, we could easily be replaceable. we could easily be disposable. We're just a cog in the machine. We're just another spoke on the wheel that the wheel is going to keep turning. And that was their coming of moment, their moment of realizing, hey, we're not that important. We're easily fickle and we're not as essential as we may pretend we are. So again, Warner Brothers submitting Wonder Woman for 15 Oscar nominations is just a great way to market the product, because obviously the movie's horrible, but it can at least break even and get people to talk about the product, even if it is just as bad as Superman 4 or Batman Forever or The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Batman v Superman. Again, it's just put it with all the other superhero movies that have continued to not fulfill expectations. And that will be Wonder Woman's legacy, Wonder Woman 1984's legacy. I have a lot of respect for the director. I think the director, Patty Jenkins, is pretty good. I liked her film Monster with Charlize Theron. That was back when, like, pretty women who decide to go ugly couldn't compete for Oscar nominations. That was back in the day when that could happen. And you saw that with Rosamund Pike with Gone Girl. But again, you know, it's a great piece of marketing. It's a great way to put the name out there. And go check out Patty Jenkins' previous work. I wouldn't suggest you check out 1984, but go check out Patty Jenkins' previous work, because I do think there's a lot of artistic input and quality to what she does. Gal Gadot, not so much. I think she would be in a much better position if she just kept continuing to kill innocent Palestinians. So I think that's my take on Wonder Woman. Is it a little bit harsh? I don't know. Maybe it is. But I don't know. Some people need to understand their place. And Wonder Woman 1984 is not that great of a film, in my opinion. So, as far as recommendations, last podcast episode, I talked about The Bachelor, and I feel like I had to clarify my stance on Victoria and just The Bachelor season in general. Okay, I was never a fan of Victoria, okay? The only reason why I like Victoria, as far as The Bachelor goes, is because she is basically carrying the show on her back. She is basically the Donald Trump of the 2016 Republican primaries, where he had a bunch of these milquetoast, run-of-the-mill Republican candidates that bankrolled on managing the debt and the deficit and how free trade is important and how we need to, you know, heavily invoke tax cuts and Wall Street deregulation. And you basically saw Donald Trump basically saying, hey, Jeb Bush, your brother lied us into war. We are still in Iraq and Afghanistan because of your brother. He said there were weapons of mass destruction. There were none. And to me, Victoria is the Trump of the show. You know, a lot of people hate watch Victoria the same way that a lot of people hate watch Donald Trump. But the one thing that Nielsen doesn't record is your hate. They record your viewership. They record the average retention rate that you have on the show. But overall, Nielsen doesn't record your hate. And Victoria is basically hoisting that show up by her shoulders by all of these other contestants that honestly are not that interesting to watch to begin with. But at least she is interesting to watch. And she does bring out that bottling up of reactions within the other contestants and within the viewers of the show, which I think is good. But again, I think Victoria is a great contestant. I do think she's going to get bounced out of the season sooner than later, so cherish her for what she has. And honestly, I do think that she is being honest with who she is. You know, I think she's being honest with her characteristics. I think she is a queen, a drama queen, that is. And there should be obviously people within the show each and every season that has that cachet to bring out those mixed feelings on her, those angsty feelings about her. But the thing with Victoria is that, like, I don't know, like, do you really want to be remembered for that? Do you really want to be remembered as the person that got in the way of other people finding love and got in the way of other people not being able to get that reaction out of individuals and not being able to, again, just be able to compete on the show and get their name out there and promote themselves on the show? I mean, when you're 5-10 years down the road, when you're, you know, with your, I'm guessing or assuming your husband or with your children, if you get married, I don't think anybody will get married to you after the show because you're a bitch. But at the same time, like 10 years down the road, do you really want to be known as the person that ruined the show for 2-3 episodes and ruined other contestants' ability to get people enticed in the product? Is that really one you want to be known as? I don't know. I think, again, you got to find ways to market yourself. And again, I do think that everyone on the show is competing for Insta followers, Instagram followers. But I don't think it's going to go as successfully as you may think it will go. Obviously, I'm not saying that she should get hate for it. But, I mean, you reap what you sow. And if you put out negative energy in the universe, then you're definitely going to get negative energy back. What is this podcast? Like, originally I was talking about, you know, tennis and comedy and, you know, now I'm talking about The Bachelor, but I don't know what this podcast is about, man. Obviously it's about tennis and comedy, but, you know, when I see, what should I say? When I see Victoria, you know what it reminds me of? That bitter comedian who's been in for 10, 15 years, who has yet to get any sort of cachet or following on the internet, despite going to so many open mics, despite trying to be catered by to the industry or catering to the industry and creating art for the industry's consumption, all of a sudden deciding to hate on people that decided to get a more grassroots appeal and approach to comedy. To me, she just represents those bitter comedians that, to me, just represent the most outdated version of comedy. That's what I think she represents. And, you know, there are a lot of people in your life that, you know, will be in that position where they're just, their general inclination is to hate, their general inclination is to ruin any sort of cohesion between other individuals, whether it's coworkers, colleagues, friends in general. But you just gotta enjoy it and make it entertaining and spin it in a way that can you know, make it so that it can be enjoyable for you guys and can be enjoyable for yourself in general. So that's generally my opinion on Victoria, an individual that reaps what she sows, but at the same time, at the end of the day, it's entertainment. And I'm so happy that she's on it because the season would be pretty boring if it weren't for her. I mean, the only other characters that I find decently likable on the show are probably MJ, probably Abigail, the person that has a hearing loss or the person that has trouble hearing. Those are like my most favorable individuals that are on the show. But yeah, that's my opinion, or that's why I think I should have clarified my stance on The Bachelor. And yeah, with that comes the end of the podcast. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for watching. Click the subscribe button down below if you're watching on YouTube. Click the bell icon for notifications. And hopefully I can see you guys on Tuesday. All right, guys. Have a good weekend. Stay safe and see y'all.